Good evening. Hello. Hello there.
Hello, Gilbert.
Hey. Got two flags as well there.
Yeah, I've got them behind me.
Yeah. Been out on the bike.
Oh, nice. Did you get far?
Nah. It's about 16 kilometers.
All right, very good.
It's a bit hilly. Oh, 18.7, so
yeah,
not too bad.
I got as far as the bottom of the garden and back.
Yeah, well, that's what I did before that, so yeah.
Did you get my photos?
Let's have a look.
Last minute, sorry.
No. You didn't send it to the Gmail, did you?
Can't remember. I'll have to have a look.
Because I never checked Gmail, so don't send it there.
The one that popped up.
Good evening. Just... No, hang on.
Oh, Gerben. Oh, no, that's the wrong one. Search for Gervin.
Oh, Jimmy.
Good evening.
Ooh. Evening.
Hi, Peter. Oh, I didn't do the name thing. Unorganized, am I?
Thought you were. Oh. What's the matter?
No, definitely don't have it, Rebecca. You can resend it now, like, if you want.
Oh, I sent it to gerbenvandyke.com.
Hang on, let's have a go there.
And I'll send it again. Which one do you want?
Yeah, that's fine. Last ones were from last week's.
Has that come through?
Things. I'll go and get it now.
It's probably because I sent it late. You probably haven't found it.
Good evening, everybody.
Hello. I like your tit for tat.
I'm not looking at the screen. I'm just trying to last minute things out.
Where's the hat from?
As usual. Lynn.
We're late.
Oh, hang on.
That's... Said in an email to Gerben with my photographs was, I've got the new version of Photoshop.
Oh.
And I struggled with it. I couldn't pull the three photographs onto one. I just couldn't get it to do it. It all starts. It was a nightmare. So I thought, I need a lesson. Maybe we need
Hi, it. Gerben. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
Can. Good.
Good evening.
Good evening, all.
Evening.
You look very patriotic there, Rebecca.
Oh, yes, I've got all my bunting.
Yeah. And Roy as well, I've got to say.
Yeah.
Oh, me.
Urban's got his flags up as well.
We started the day with a funeral, unfortunately.
Oh.
A chap at the top of the road. Went in for a hip operation and came out dead from COVID.
Oh.
So,
yeah.
And so everyone was asked to line the street at 10:30 this morning. So that sort of took anything that might have happened in the morning.
Who was that, Roy?
Ian and Elizabeth. Is it Ian? He's in the top house on the left-hand side.
Oh, right. I didn't know them.
Yeah.
Oh, terrible shame, Matt.
It is. I don't know. Pumi went in the QE, but I'm not sure. He should have gone in the Freeman if he'd had any chance, because the Freeman have got very few patients in a large hospital and no COVID people.
Why?
They cleared everyone out to make room. The RVI cleared people out to take COVID, and they've only got about 60 patients. And the idea was that when people were over the infection but still needed care, they would transfer them to the Freeman, so they emptied the Freeman, and more or less. I mean, they've got some patients. But the QE have got COVID and ordinary patients. So although they'll try and keep them apart, it's high risk, isn't it?
Yeah.
Should use those temporary hospitals for the paying patients.
Yeah, there's no way. They're a long way off.
Hello, everyone.
Evening, all.
Good evening, everybody. Hi.
Hi.
Good evening. Hi.
Is that your union top up?
Yeah.
It's mine.
Good one.
I'm wearing a Coldstream Star.
You're out of focus. I don't know why, but
the light coming in from the window, I think.
Yes, it just makes it a bit harder to see, Dave.
There.
Yes, it's got a nice sort of fuzziness to it.
Yeah.
So's the badge.
No, it's not turned sharp, as you might say.
Oh my goodness, I remember that.
It's got a warm. Hello, Doreen.
Hi, Rebecca.
Hello.
Oh, I can see the screen now. Hang on.
Hi, Morgan.
Hi.
We've had a street party since 3 o'clock this afternoon, and it's still going on.
We're having a nice house party here.
There's been plenty of wine flowing and beer, and
there's our nibbles.
Sing along, we've just sang "We'll Meet Again."
they did that here this afternoon. "We'll Meet Again."
Yeah.
There's a party at my street belting out.
As David says, we had a tea party here. We had a high tea.
Ooh.
And now we're having the champagne.
Oh, very nice.
Cheers.
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 Yes, cheers,
Doreen.
Cheers, Doreen.
Cheers, Colin.
Cheers to the camera club.
Yes.
We're a little thin on the ground tonight.
There's a few things people might be watching, doing other things, mightn't they?
Yeah.
I don't know what they're doing.
No, well,
don't ask. Hi, Doreen.
Yes.
Like your hat. Linda, hi.
Hello.
Hi, Linda.
Hello.
Hi. Linda.
Right.
We filled their glass, Peter.
What?
We filled their glass.
12 people showing work.
Already?
Well.
So,
I don't know whether people have noticed over these last few weeks. There's a Royal Wood picture right behind my head.
A Royal Wood?
Your head normally covers it over.
And it's Sandwood Bay, isn't it?
That's Sandwood Bay, yeah.
Yeah, I can see it.
Doesn't look like Roy.
David, I'll have to have a chat with you about going to the Falklands. I was asking Edward about it.
Okay, if you can get us a ticket, all the better.
Well, I think you have to do that, but I'll talk you through what you need to do.
That was on the first trip, David.
Yes,
that
it was.
Bay. I can see that because I used a different foreground on the one I like best, I think.
That was 1988.
Yeah.
All right.
Yes, the other was 1998. 1989, wasn't it?
Can anyone remember? I've just had an email from Trevor Ermel. There was a girl called Valerie at about the time Anne Hunter was a member, Roy.
Yes.
Yes.
I remember her saying, I can't remember much about her. I remember more about Anne Hunter.
I can remember like David, but I can't remember her surname.
Valerie, I'd probably be able to tell you. Does he want to know then?
Yes, he's...
What's he asking?
Because he's doing an article on Wickham's trips they used to have.
Oh, he'll be starting with Aberdeen. He'll be starting with Aberdeen, as far as north we went for a day outing. We took a day return train trip before you joined, I've got a photo of it. I had it up at the 40th anniversary on somewhere. It might even be on that leaf that we did. But I'll send you one. Yes, it was the farthest north we did on a day trip. And Aberdeen was quite a way for a day trip, isn't it? By train, we didn't have car sharing.
Another question Trevor Ermel's asking is, can anyone remember the name of Ernie Richardson's wife?
Mrs. Richardson.
Yeah, here.
Well done, Alan. That was 10 out of 10 for that one.
Yeah. I'm splitting my sides. Stitch me up.
I'll make a note to look up Valerie.
You certainly asked for that one, mate, David. What did you expect?
Well, good evening, everybody.
Yeah, you look like a hair shop man.
Yeah, I've been dressed up in my 1940s outfit. I've just taken my waistcoat off, tie. And you probably heard the music down in Orchard Road area and up at Sunnyside and down to Rowlands Gale and partly to Shockey Bridge. So anyway, we've had a good afternoon, so I've kept my hat on, my cap. So we're going
just
to see...
Before we start, please, David.
Yes.
Before we start, Paul Hatton sends his apologies. He's a little bit unwell. He's gone antibiotics with chest infection.
Oh, but yeah.
It's just a normal one and not a COVID
one. It's just a normal one, indeed.
That's no excuse, oh. I've got one.
To yeah. Put us in the mood, I thought.
I've been listening to that all afternoon.
Well, there you are, just a bit of an introduction to what we're seeing tonight. So, you all, and over to you, Gerben.
All right, to you. Let me get myself organized.
Oh, you want some more music then?
No, well, shouldn't take that long. Hang on, share screen.
Got some Vera Lynn then.
And also, am I recording? Hang on.
Yes, it's on.
Yeah.
It's on. Cool. Oh, you can see that, can you?
Right. I can see Carol Stout's name beautifully. And the recording red button.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Right. Carol, over to you. Is Carol here?
Yes, she's here. We've seen her.
Oh, yeah.
Can we hear her? Switch the microphone on.
She's frozen. There's internet problems.
Oh, dear.
Take the next one and come back to her. Is that possible?
It's not us, because it's only Carol and David, and I guess it's their internet connection is dropped out.
Well, Gerben, can we go to the next person and come back to Carol?
We certainly can. I'll have to... Yeah, they might have to reset the router or disconnect and reconnect. So Carol and David, if you can hear me, you're kind of frozen.
Well, between them, I guess they were going to have the most military people.
So, Colin.
I knew I brought some background music for something.
Yeah.
Oh. Hear it laugh.
Just something I was sent on the internet. I thought it might start the evening off with a bit of a smile.
Yeah, very good.
Very good.
Oh, Carol's back.
Oh.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, this was,
we skipped to Colin, and we'll do Carol after Colin, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
This was taken at Beamish, and I've entitled it, "Have You Broken It Again, Pike?"
Very good.
One of the military days that they had at Beamish, and I thought it was just apt for tonight.
Indeed. Excellent.
This one's, he's called old Bill, the character. I don't know if anyone knows him. He's from the First World War, and it was a cartoon that was run between 1914 and 15, featuring old Bill, who you can see is an old veteran back at the front with his rifle and his walrus moustache. And this was mounted on a vehicle that was at Beamish at the time, and I just thought, again, it was sort of apt for tonight, you know.
Good.
And I think that's all I've put up tonight. The only two military ones I could find.
That's fine. Great. Thank you very much, Colin.
Right. Carol.
Hi, Abby. Right. Here we go. Down at Chelsea, the pensioners, where the Chelsea pensioners live.
Royal Hospital.
Thank you. The Royal Hospital. It was visited by his Prince Harry before he met Meghan in his good days. He was a great speaker that day. Okay, thanks.
Can you tell me what the sash was? What's the significance of the sash?
Go back a minute, please.
Yeah.
That sash, David will tell you.
Yeah. Because the others have belts around them, but he hasn't.
He's in dismounted uniform of the Household Cavalry, but he's wearing a beret of the Army Air Corps. As you all know, he's a helicopter pilot, but his tunic and trousers and sword and that sash round is it's part of the uniform of the Blues and Royals.
He's the only person who could get away with that.
What's...
Another thing, if you notice, that was Founders Day, Chelsea Hospital. All men, including myself, are given us a sprig of oak leaves. And that's because the hospital was founded by Charles II.
Oh.
And Charles II, if, as you all know in history, hid in an oak tree. That's why they've all got a sprig of oak leaves on their tunics.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you, David. Another place down London, this is Windsor Castle and the grounds here. And this was to mark the celebration of the new flag. And it's called, what do you call it?
Presentation of colours.
New flag.
Bloody flag.
Well, I've just said that because you said that the other week, remember?
I didn't call it a flag. I never do call it a flag.
Oh, let's not fall out over our flag.
Oh, that was domestic.
I also don't know anyone else.
It does nothing like a good domestic.
Right. So moving on, that's Her Majesty, quite a few years ago. And
oh, I like that.
We have Sergeant Barrett, our friend, who is retired now from the Coldstream Guard. So the Coldstream wear this red plume in their bearskin. And this is in his apartment where we were staying for the week. This was in 2014 when he was still in. Well, he was still in the Guard's Chapel. That's where he retired to when he came out of the Guards as the sergeant. And the flag the colours that you see there are the real old ones where they're hand stitched and that lovely material. You don't get them now.
Oh, are they just printed now then?
Yeah, they're like just cotton material now and
cheap stuff. Should be bunting, not cotton.
So, yeah, so next one, please. Horse Guards Parade on with the band here, the Coldstream Band in with the red. Plume, blue, plume. Okay. And, so I liked, you know, I just made this one so that he's got that motion and you can see the movement of the marching. It's the three drum majors leading. Next one, please.
Because that was done.
Yep.
Yeah, good one.
On Wellington Barracks. Down in London, central London. We have the Coldstream again. And because we're friends with Sergeant Barrett, we get into a lot of places that the public don't normally get. And this is another one of them. And the next one, please. Is the chapel, the Guards Chapel, down in London, where Fred was the keeper.
Lots of flags.
Pardon?
Lots of flags.
No.
Yes. They're not flags.
He said deliberately.
Flags.
Huh? Lots of flags.
Very, very old colour, these ones. And once the rot, they just let them rot. They don't do any repairs. It's like the ones that you'll have seen in St. Nicholas Cathedral.
Yes.
I've got them hanging there as well. So if you look right down at the altar there.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It is gorgeous. So the next one is the altar with next one, please.
Oh, yes.
So where's this?
This is the Guards Chapel down in London.
Okay. Wow.
And one of the officers there setting the place up ready for the service. So we've seen a few services there and been to many services there. There was a wedding one day. It was lovely. We weren't invited. We just sneaked in at the back. And I think that's it. Oh no,
another one.
The one more.
The ceiling.
Yes. This back to Chelsea Pensioners, the Royal Hospital. This is the Wren Chapel that nobody gets to see, and well, none of the public get to see in this. This is another place where we're privileged to be. So I took this picture. It was quite dark, and it's come out a bit. What do you call it when it's green? Sorry, green. So it's a little bit greeny, but it's the record, and it's the record of the day. And I thought it was beautiful, and where nobody else is going to see. So you're getting privileged to see this tonight. And it was built by Christopher Wren before he did the St. Paul's Cathedral. And he did the dome especially. It was small, it is smaller, I should say, than St. Paul's. And he did it because it was a forerunner, just to see how it was going to work. It was really to do. He did this to do St. Paul's.
Who did the graffiti?
Graffiti.
Since we're insulting things.
Moving your flags.
Well, I'll pass on that one.
Carol, did you say this was on the site of the Royal Hospital?
Yes. Yes. It's the chapel.
It's lovely.
Which is called after Christopher Wren, the Wren Chapel. It is, it's gorgeous. Very nice. That's it, Dan. Thank you.
Thank you.
Right. Colin's.
Not Colin again, please.
Yeah.
Thank you, David.
Yeah, that was quick. Right, Steve. Dave.
Oh.
Hmm. Well, he's not. Is he here?
Don't Dave, think so.
Dave Quinn isn't here.
Oh, dear. That's in Scotland.
That's the borders, isn't it?
That's the commando.
To the place called Speen Bridge.
Should we move him to the end in case he does join us late? Yeah. Move on and come back to them just in case he comes late.
Right. Oh. Actually, there's only two. But, yeah, never mind.
You can tell us about them if he turns up later.
Right.
Yeah. David.
Okay. VE Day 75. These are the medals of my father. He served in the 50th Division, Tyne Tees, hence the two red tees. He was in the Royal Signals, the cap badge above him. The medals in the centre display, Royal recognised, because he'll have a few of them, are his Second World War Sovereign's medals. The medal on the bottom left is the Normandy medal given by the French. My dad never saw that medal. The medal on the bottom right is the Dunkirk medal, again given by the French government. My dad never saw that one either. They were given in the 1970s. So that's the first image. The next image is, because we didn't have any London ceremonial, here's a state trumpeter of the Household Cavalry, and I managed to position myself to get the Union flag right behind this state trumpeter.
So David, is that not a Union colour?
No, that's the Union flag. The material coming from his trumpet, that is a regimental colour.
Right.
Next one.
David, who would make those? The colour on his trumpet, who would do all that embroidery and stuff?
There's a company called Hobson in London, and they make all regimental colours for the British Army. If you go back, Gerben, you can see it's all stitched in gold wire.
Yeah, it's amazing.
They take years and years to produce.
Nice.
Absolutely priceless. This is, as you saw with some of Carol's images, this is again being given access on the parade square of Wellington Barracks. And as the guards go through inspection before a guard change, the band form a circle and entertain the spectators. And I managed, obviously, to get in really close, get the two tuba players with the director of music in the middle holding the baton.
So what do they hold in the white pouch?
The music.
Never. Oh. Some sort of
have record. Music on the instrument, obviously, but as they go through the day's proceedings, they'll quickly flip that little pouch open and get the next piece of this. The stop for a breather, and here is a close-up of the big bass drum, a couple of bearskins with the Coldstream plume again, and of course, this is like an interval in the performance of the music. So I've got this close-up of the big drum of the bass drum of the Coldstream Guards band. And the next one. Next one, Gerben.
Sir.
Coming.
Again, during the interval, here's a horn player. Has the rank of a colour sergeant. You can see the three gold chevrons plus the extra insignia in the middle of the chevrons. He's a warrant officer class 2, but he's a horn player in the regimental band. And the next one is the horn player, the same guy, but this time, as he's playing, I've crouched down beside him and got this nice composition of his right arm and his hand in the bulb of the French horn. What caught my eye was the reflection of his buttons on his tunic being reflected in the instrument at the top of the picture.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the next one. And there's the drum major, the guy who stands at the front. Another very revered piece of regimental regalia, the drum major's mace. You can see engraved on the top on those scrolls all the battle honours, and then of course the Coldstream Star. And I managed to get the drum major to turn the mace so you can see Coldstream Guards carved into the brasswork of this mace.
You see Waterloo on the top.
It does. I was looking at that.
Yeah, Waterloo.
So David, what's the blue symbol? Was that what the Coldstream, the guy with the bear skin had on his back in stripes.
A bit like a fleur-de-lis, you mean?
Yeah, is that what it is, just fleur-de-lis?
No, it's...
That's what the carved drums wear. The drummers, like in the old days of Waterloo, the drummer boys, their tunic would be emblazed with fleur-de-lis.
Oh,
and of course, I've got in close with a wide aperture... I've just managed to include his medals since we're showing medals off tonight.
David,
the next one.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
The tunics, I've seen red tunics like this for sale at some 40s events and in some antique shops and things. And looking at them, I mean, they're fabulously made. But I wondered, would they be genuine tunics or would they be reproductions for something that had then gone on to be sold?
I've also seen, the same as you, Linda, tunics, and they are genuine tunics. How they've acquired them, I don't know.
Because the workmanship on them was stunning when you looked inside, and the way that, you know, the way the lining was put in and everything about them was fabulous. Yeah. Made.
Yeah, I know. How they get them, I don't know. And then, just to show, in World War II, we had the birth of the Parachute Regiment. They were formed during the Second World War, 1942. I happened to be on a night exercise with these guys at Otterburn. We just finished a night march, an overnight march, and I wanted this sort of aggressive sort of mood of the Paris. And I managed, this guy, it is a bit of a poor shot because he obviously wouldn't normally have his non-aiming eye open, but I wanted some eye contact with his parrot. I had, by the way, made sure his chamber was clear before I stood in his position to take his photograph.
Very wise.
I made sure there wasn't a round in the chamber.
So did he have to fire off for you?
The only person shooting that day was me. Well, at this time, was me. And the next picture was taken much more recently of a Coldstreamer, again on a night exercise, but times have changed. And what you've got here, if you look to the left of his face, is the sight of the actual weapon he's going to fire. And on his left eye is an infrared night vision, so he can see what he's shooting at. And again, the same precautions. I had to let him demonstrate to me that the chamber was empty before I could stand in front of him like that.
He didn't take his word. Didn't take his word for it.
Quite an intimidating sight, isn't it?
Yeah.
Modern technology. And the next one. On the same weekend, this is the Coldstream Guards mortar platoon, and here's a guy taking a sight of a 3-inch mortar. Mm-hmm. They've used some of these photographs in their recruiting posters.
So how do they aim one of those things? I mean, it's pointing up in there and he's looking down and can't see.
Well, he's looking through a sight and you can see with his right hand, he's changing the angle, the pitch of the barrel, and they can put a different size charge in to how far they want the mortar shell to travel over the ground. Well, up in the air and land on the ground.
There's no lens on the front or anything.
He's looking sideways to where the direction is.
Yeah, he's looking sideways.
He's not looking
at his target. He's actually looking at the calibrations where his right hand is turning the dial.
Or distance calibration or something.
Yeah.
But the sight won't be pointing the same way as the mortar, will it? The mortar, because it'll be a tremendous elevation on the mortar.
Yeah. Is that not the same?
The sight he's looking at, if it's on the target, will be a straight line to the target.
Well, with
the mortar doesn't travel in a straight line.
With a mortar, that is not necessary. The mortar is normally firing like high up and then down again, so you wouldn't actually see the target.
Yeah.
So they set out direction poles, and then they direct the sights to them, and it will all be adjusted and calculated by a firing direction officer. So, and well, you will see later on why I know that sort of stuff.
I didn't like to ask her.
And the next one. Finish off with ceremonial, as Carol did. Here's the drum majors at the front and state dress. This was the end of the parade, which Carol showed the Queen. This was the presentation of colours at Windsor Castle. And as they marched off parade, I knew by instinct the two drum majors would salute as they left the parade ground with the band playing behind them. So I just waited for the plum moment when they both put their hands to their heads for the salute. And the eyes right. And that's my final picture, I think.
Yep.
Thank you, David. Yep. Interesting.
Thank you very much.
Ed?
So I've just put my screen on black and white. Am I ready to go?
Yes, you are.
Sorry, guys. Well, I've been watching the celebrations on TV and I've been watching people giving their stories and their anecdotes. I thought, well, how can I introduce my few pictures with that respect? And not very well, really, because people in my family never actually talked about anything in the war. And we got very, very little information from them. And it's very sad because I think we lost a whole lot of history. My dad was, he joined up and him and his mate, and they were best better off in the army, the living facilities, than what they were at home. He was captured before Dunkirk. He did a nice tour of Austria, albeit on a march, being bombed by the Russians. And he was taken out the coal mines in Poland by nuns. That was his war. My father-in-law, he was in the Desert Rats. He volunteered, and he never got home for 6 or 7 years. From the day he was demobbed to the day he died, he never volunteered for anything, not ate corned beef. So that was his war. I had an uncle who was he was in the medics, and he was part of the sort of troops who went in to liberate Belsen. And I remember when I was very young, he showed me photographs he'd taken at Belsen. So believe me, it did happen. Right, so that's just a sort of my family who are, and I'm not like a lot of families, I think for some reason they did not get any information from the loved ones who were at war. I went to Tyne Cot, hoping to do a sort of, I'd seen these photographs before, and I thought, oh, I'm going to get a wonderful project out of this. And when I got there, and I took loads of photographs, got home, I just couldn't, I felt it wasn't my place to do anything with them. So this one was taken at Hill 62. I think this farmer had a bit of a museum, and this was, he had sort of trenches and things. This was just under a tree, there was poppies and a photograph. Next one, Gerben. So that is a sort of, I took the coloured image, and that was an invert, like as if it was a negative, if you like. And that was the print I did of it, which was obviously black and white, and no names, or just an unknown soldier to me with the old poppies on these wooden stakes. So that's me. That was me. Tyne Cot project, which was two photographs. Which, but in saying that, I think it speaks for itself. Next, Gordon. As far as I was, these shots are all from the wonderful World War II at Pickering, and I tried to pick out a series of, I think there's maybe 8 or 9 shots of people in a celebratory mood rather than just showing weapons and as if the sort of war had ended and people were celebrating. This was a shot of a young lady through the window on the train. As you see, she's in the sort of 40s gear. They were obviously having a good time. Whether that relates to the actual time or not, I don't know. I wasn't there. Next, Gordon. This sort of shows it as if a family were having a day out to the seaside. This is Grosmont Station, I think. So I could imagine, well, would this happen during the war, just after war, families going off for picnics to Whitby or whatever. Next, please. Again, this is another family who had been out for the day, the mother and the three children. Where you can sort of imagine, where's the father? Is he at war, or is he alive, or whatever? And that was just on, I think that was on Pickering Station. I have another shot of her, and she was actually breastfeeding on the station, so I don't quite know whether I didn't show that one because it may not have been true for that particular time of history. Next, please. This lady's celebrating. She must have been after war. She said, I'm going to celebrate, I'm going to buy a hat. Again, this is in one of the marketing places at behind the station at Pickering. Next, please. This is on them. I had to fight my way in to get a series of these photographs. This was an American sort of dance band, if you like, at the top end of Pickering High Street. It was about 6 deep, and I've managed to force my way in eventually to the front. And just this sort of American band playing wonderful music, just like Dave, his introduction. People, after the parade, they dance on the streets, and it almost could be like a sort of VE day, I think. Really, really good if you can get near it. I've never been to Pickering for a couple of years. It was very, very commercial last time. It was absolutely jam-packed with people, but nevertheless a good day. Next screen, please. Can't remember what. This is just a young couple dressed up as if... I got actually, that's posed. That reminds me of the Robert Duvall photograph of the kiss, and his were all sort of posed, so I didn't see why mine couldn't be. Just a guy maybe on leave or something with his fiancée or whatever, smoked a pipe, and she had a earring stood in the left ear, which I omitted to remove. But that was the two young lovers, if you like, during the war. Next, please. dancing, when you see these sort of documentaries or films of the wartime, dancing in the streets was quite the big thing. So this was the people in a regalia and just, again, just music and dancing in the street, basically. Next girl. Again, this was on platform station at Pickering, I think. It's, it was quite difficult because at one time you're on that side of the station, you only got the people who had the reenactment clothing on. It was their hobby, that's what they did, and a lot of the stuff was authentic. But I think the latter years have allowed the general public to go on, and we had that wonderful thing that about the mobile phones, and it was getting harder and harder to get the more sort of authentic photograph, if you like, of the day. So again, there's people obviously travelling, waiting for the train, and this couple up dancing together. Next, please. Hello.
It's coming.
I think this is the last one. This is just a lady waiting for a date. She looks not very happy. So I took a few photographs and I think, well, to myself, well, I'm sorry, Ped, but he's not coming. He's down the pub with the lads, so you're not going to get your date. So just take the dog for a walk. I think that's
the dog's almost camouflaged, isn't it?
What, the dog or the lady?
The dog.
Both. I think that's, no, what
I'm fascinated by the way the dog is camouflaged.
So that was just a sort of little series about, you know, people, obviously there was very, very hard times where people reenacting the enjoyment that they could have. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much. The dog looks like a Banksy, graffiti on the wall.
The dog, yeah.
Hey, it might have been. Do you think I get any money for it, Alan?
Yeah, go for it.
Going back on this, boom, boom, boom.
No chance, I think.
You have been thinking.
Yes. So, this is... this is not a picture of mine. This is my dad's picture when he was in the army.
Must have been a dry summer, Gavin, was it?
It must have been in the 50s or something. But
I'm getting that way myself.
This is... pretty typical of the Dutch army, I think. So, I hope. Very informal. When I was trying to get some images, I found this one. And the title says, this is his first enlargement. So, this is my dad, actually, with his hobby, which was photography. And he did do black and white, mainly prints himself. So I still got that enlarger, I think, in a box somewhere that you see just above his head. Or
wow, the left. Yes.
Funny thing is I saw that English flag on the wall as well, which I thought was quite fitting. Mm-hmm. But this is nothing to do with the war anyway, so, but just a funny one. Now, that fella on the right, that is me. Here. So...
The one on the left.
The one on the left was a colleague. This was in a training camp in Ermelo in the Netherlands, training to be a mortar commander. This is, I think, an IPR tracked vehicle.
The end of the film star, Matt Damon, was it Greg
Gordon? Yeah, Starsky and Hutch, this one. that is our equipment. So this was the IPR tracked vehicle with a mortar. This is 120 mil. I think it's French made. What you see obviously here is like an exercise in the Netherlands. We're not actually shooting because the first shell, you would actually shoot that ground plate that you see behind the wheels, you would shoot that right into the ground. So but this was just an exercise to quickly sort of assemble and get it set up and then
get it back onto the vehicle and move on again. The premise here was we were fighting against the Russians, as well as the Russians, and they were always moving very fast, a bit like the Blitzkrieg. So we had to like set up very quickly and then move again very quickly. So now that is also one of my pictures that I've enlarged myself. So, which was like a hobby that I did when I was in Seedorf in Germany. So this is one of my my team. This guy was, I think he was the guy who set up the directions. This is quite a unique picture because the actual shell that we're firing here is actually in the shot.
Yeah, very good indeed.
Yeah. Normally what you would see is a little bit later is the like the what do you call it in English, the black powder. So you have like rings around like a steel rod at the end, and you would see that firing off, so at after the shell's already been and gone. But yeah, it's about 8 kilometers that you could shoot, I think. Normally a bit further with some extra help, but yeah, quite powerful things.
So, what camera would you have there?
Oh, I would probably have my I don't know.
I've gone.
This would be just like a pocket camera, and it's obviously the picture's been in plastic in an album, and the age hasn't done it any good. So, yeah.
I was just saying, Gerben, that is one hell of a size mortar.
Yeah. If we were in anger kind of thing, you would fire off and let the shell explode just above ground, and then nothing would live for like 100 by 100 meter kind of thing.
What exactly were you doing there? Were you in national service?
Yeah, this was national service, yeah. So this is my team, and I'm actually commanding them. So I basically have not a lot to do other than just shout a bit.
Was that compulsory for you then?
Yes.
Did you have a lottery like Denmark?
Sorry, say again?
Did they have a lottery like Denmark? They put a number...
No, this was just national service. If you had to like be medically checked, and if you were able-bodied kind of thing and of sound mind, you had no chance of escaping, really. A few years later, they abolished it all, so I was one of the lucky ones, I guess, or unlucky, whatever you want to call it.
Just realized the war was over then.
Actually, this was the exercise. So obviously, this is a live firing exercise in the Netherlands, where we nearly threatened to blow up a highway. They had that device that you saw in David's picture for the directions. They had it set up like at a 90-degree angle, so they were all wrong. So they were like hiding that mortar like right outside of the safety bounds that we set up. So I had to like shout stop, and then the captain came running over and he was all angry. And well, yeah, this is why we have that safety device, right? So
good, man.
Yeah,
good. Did you go anywhere to practice on hills?
Hills. In Germany, they got hills, so we I was stationed in Germany in Seedorf. So
right.
And this was actually a live firing exercise. It might be back in Holland,
right?
Where the whole they put the whole set on low loaders and travel backwards and forwards. But yeah. This is a few years later. I think this is one of the few remaining Spitfires that is a two-seater. I think there was only two flying at that time. It's probably 2005 or six. He was given this sort of celebratory flight here. a colleague of mine. Beautiful sound. Right, a few more. This is Berlin. This is the memorial for the persecution of the Jews, the massacre. Here you can see an other angle right in the center of Berlin. And another overview. It's quite impressive.
Yeah, you know that one, Gerben, it's very impressive.
Yeah, and that's the Gedächtniskirche, or the memorial church. So that, I think, is my last one. Yes.
Thanks, Gerben. Well done.
Well, thank you, Gerben. They were great.
Right, Keith.
Is Keith with us?
Keith is not with us. Right. He's got some beautiful shots, mind, of planes.
Are we expecting him? Do we know?
It's probably not coming in now. He would have been.
Come in, Gerben. I spoke to Keith the last time when he presented some work, and I've asked him why he doesn't come along to these. He says it clashes with a train show that's on the BBC.
All right.
So the trains are taking more precedence than we are. He says, but he does catch up. He likes to. He likes to watch the catch-up recording, the recording that Gerben puts out. So if you're listening to this, Keith, get your act together and tune into us and record the train show.
Yeah.
Yes. Good one.
That's rocket science, is it?
So
if that's the case, Gerben, look through them, yes.
Yes, we'll look through them quickly without a lot of commentary. I'll try and fill in. This is a Spitfire.
Yeah.
This isn't.
It could be a Spitfire.
You never know. It might be.
He was with the French Onion Man.
He was 80 the last time I photographed.
I like that one.
Lovely.
He really. He looks like someone.
Actually, it's good shots there, but it's very hard work to get a shot without the background. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This is a Lancaster, I believe.
It's a cracking shot.
Good shot.
He put that in one of the competitions, didn't he? And he got a prize, a highly commended or something with it.
Right, great, yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, very good.
I think a Spitfire.
Yeah, it's a Spitfire, that.
Yeah.
It's scary to take that shot.
Lovely. Wow. Hurricane.
Hurricane.
Nice one.
That's a hurricane.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Lancaster bomber, is it? Lancaster?
Lancaster, yeah. Beautiful one. That's a lovely shot.
Oh.
So planes and birds, basically, is that's the theme.
But they're both flying machines, aren't they?
No comment. Oh, hang on. Here's an outlier.
Whoa.
It's a bit rough. The Bevan boy.
That's Peter without the beard, isn't it?
I thought he was looking very Spitfire.
Is that the one in London, this one? There's a few of them, isn't it?
That's the one that's in Pancras. If anybody hasn't seen it, it's worth a look.
It's good. Very good.
Seen these a few times,
yeah.
It's Tommy.
Tommy
and Carl.
That had to be a train in it.
Which one's Tommy?
Tornado. This one. Not the plane. All right.
Yes.
Yeah. After I've
put the photographs up of the guy, you know, that was posing for the portraits with his muscles. I was going to say Durban there. where he said we could have him back again, and he would bring a female, weightlifter there, bodybuilder.
Oh, right.
The men could get excited as well, you know. But maybe get out of lockdown.
Sounds good.
Oh, well.
Kevin, you better come in quick.
Yeah, go on in.
Gervin. Well, when David threw the challenge down last Friday, I must admit I was a little bit baffled as to what I could produce. And then I remembered in 2016, me and my wife and another couple went down to the National Memorial Arboretum, which is near Lichfield in Staffordshire. Mm-hmm. We may probably have been there. This one is a memorial for the armed forces. It's the Armed Forces Memorial. And it recognizes and thanks those who have given their lives since the Second World War. It's sort of part of NATO operations and this sort of thing. Now, as you look at it, you can see it's oval shaped. And the wall on your right hand side, that is the south wall, which is a very, very, it's got a very unique feature in it. If you could just move to the next one, Gervin. And this is that feature. It's got a gap in the wall. And as you can see, there's another gap in the inner wall. And why the architect done that was because on the 11th hour of the 11th day of the 11th month, the sun shines directly through that gap.
Right.
You can just see a little bit of red in the distance there. It's a bronze wreath. And the sun rays shines directly that special.
Wow. It's amazing, that.
Yeah, it is. It was actually worked out to a T. And the next one, Gervin.
Modern Stonehenge.
Yeah, this is that wreath that it shines on.
That was on TV tonight.
Yeah, the ray of light, the sun comes through and shines on that wreath. What you see in the background is what's called the South Atlantic Memorial. And it's dedicated to the men who lost their lives in the Falklands conflict. I believe there's about 16,000 names lasered into the stone round there of the servicemen who've lost their lives since the Second World War and all these operations that have been ongoing through the world.
So was it during the Second World War as well, Kevin?
No, this is just since the Second World War.
Right. Yeah.
You go on to the next one, Gervin? This is the Royal Air Force Association Memorial and Remembrance Garden. It's an absolutely huge place. The garden itself on the inside of there is about 50 meters in length. And this is where they call the Eagle Winston. I can't imagine why, but we have a little bit of a family connection with the Royal Air Force. As I'll tell you, we have a connection with all three armed forces. My mother's youngest brother, my uncle John, who lived in Devon, he was in the Royal Air Force. And he was Douglas Barr's electrician on his Spitfire. Maybe the younger ones don't know, have heard of Douglas Barr, but he was an legless pilot. He was an absolute inspiration.
Chap who lost his legs, wasn't he?
Beg your pardon, Roy?
Chap who lost his legs.
That's the one. If you see the film Reach for the Skies, Kenneth Moore's in it. It's about Douglas Barr.
Didn't the fact he had false legs save his life? He had to bail out, didn't he?
Yes, he got taken prisoner, I believe. Now, I don't know the myths and the stories. Apparently, he got taken prisoner, and the RAF dropped some false legs in so he could escape. That's a nice story, or not, I don't know.
It is true, that, Kevin.
It's true, is it?
It is.
Yeah.
But my uncle John, he was his electrician, like, and he said Barter was well known for his fierce temper. and he's very good, colourful choice of adjectives. Can I put it that way? He was, but they said he was really a fearsome man. They were very terrified of him. He wanted to be up there fighting. He was an inspiration to the pilots. But there was a little bit of a soft side to him. He says, if we got his aircraft ready, there was always a packet of cigarettes for all the lads who worked for him. So that's the Royal Air Force Association Memorial. Next one, Graham. This one's the Royal Navy Memorial. It's got 13 glass coloured panels in it. The guy who made this called it the Sails of Coloured Glass. It represents the oceans around the world. And you see the figure, the sailor who's just standing there. What he's doing is he's facing exactly where the sun goes down on the 11th hour, on the 11th of November. Wow. And the memorial goes around the theme of the going down of the sun, we will remember them. Mm-hmm. Only when the sun is going down, shining through all those different coloured glasses, it forms like a very coloured sea in front of it. Next one, please, Kevin.
Kevin, yeah. Where's that? Where's
it? It's near Lichfield in Staffordshire. Right. It's about 150 square acres. Big, and there's about 300 memorials in, so to get it round it in a day, you're pushing it.
Kevin is very well established now, because the last time I saw the documentary, the trees hadn't grown anything, so is it quite well established now?
Oh yes, absolutely. Well, it's 2016 when we were there, and it was just on the news this week, actually. There's been another one unveiled this last week.
It was on TV tonight.
Was it? Right, yeah. This one here, obviously, I think everybody will know this one, the Battle of the River Plate, one of the most iconic battles, I think, in the Second World War, where the three cruisers cornered the Graf Spree. And the Exeter got a real hammering in that one. It had to withdraw from the battle. But again, we've got another family connection with the Royal Navy here, because my wife's uncle Joe was on the Ajax, but not until the end of the war. He wasn't at the Battle of the River Plate. But as we know, it was the 13th of December in 1939 when the Graf Spee went into Montevideo in Uruguay, which was a neutral country. And the captain of the Graf Spee wanted 2 to 3 weeks to repair his ship, and they give him, with it being a neutral country, they give him 72 hours. And the rest is just history. He scuttled the ship and committed suicide. But that was one of the, but he's our Uncle Joe. He served on battleships before he went up to cruisers. He was always very honoured to have, maybe he's been on an iconic ship like the Ajax.
Mm-hmm. Yes, recently on TV there was a programme looking at the searching for the wreck of Admiral Graf Spee's ship. And they found it eventually. So he was the chap who the Graf Spee that you're talking about will be named after.
Right.
The Ajax and, it just got out of my mind, the British ones, yeah.
Yeah, very good, right. Okay, the next one, please, Gavin. You're there, Gavin. Ah, you're there.
Thought he deserted his post there, Kevin.
Yeah. This one quite intrigued me, because I thought it was just one of these memorials that was under construction. It was just two red brick walls with an open gate. But I've seen the plaques on the wall, so I had to walk up to see what it was. And it's dedicated to all prisoners of war. Mm-hmm. And it's just a very simple memorial, but it's got a very powerful message, I think. Mm-hmm. There, the gates are open. The war's finished. Go home. Go back to your loved ones. Mm-hmm. This one has got a bit of a connection with my wife's father, because he fought in the desert most of the war. He fought in the Battle of Monte Cassino. He was taken prisoner, but he escaped. And if you hadn't known him, you'd probably thought, well, yeah, he would do that. At the end of the war, when most people were sent back to civilian life, he didn't. He was kept on because he used to escort the judges to the Nuremberg trials. he always used to be quite happily say when he went out there, he had the judge's briefcase and it was handcuffed to him until he got there. He wasn't allowed to put it out. It was handcuffed to him there and then back again. So I think he'd done more than he's been.
Interesting story.
Most people have asked him why he didn't write a book, because the things that he'd seen and done in the war was unbelievable. He was one of the, like, did you say your father? Because he was one of them, the first ones into the Dachau war camps as well. He didn't mention that very much, but I think we're all well aware of the horrors that our soldiers came across when they went in there. And my wife's father was one of them. But he fought the Germans, he fought the Nazis, and then I think he's seen the war trials and he was quite pleased that he's seen them finished off. So the next one, please, Gerben. This is the Duke of Lancaster's memorial. This is the one the Queen opened and laid the wreath there, like you see, the week before we went down, so she just beat us to it. But it's David, the Duke of Lancaster. Lancaster, that wasn't formed until 2006. And it's called the Lancaster Regiment because they take most of the recruits come from Cumbria, Lancashire, Merseyside, and Manchester. And the lion is actually facing and pointing towards the northwest of England because that's where all its recruits come from. Okay, next one, Gerben. We couldn't leave our ladies out, could we?
Yeah, the land girls.
These are the land girls, the women who worked in the factories. There's lots of small memorials like this put around the grounds of it, but this was the one I thought was more suiting because we always remember them as being the land army. Worked in the woods, the forestries, that worked in the factories, that kept the place going, that supplied the timber for the country. And I think it's fair that they get a great tribute within these within the Arboretum here. And finally, the last one. This is the Royal British Legion's Never Forget Tribute Garden. As you can just see in the bottom left-hand corner, it's got January. Well, this garden is divided up into 12 segments. And if you have a loved one and you know what month he perished, died, you can purchase one of these poppies. They're called everlasting poppies, and you can go and place it in the month of where that loved one died. And it'll be there. It's a personal commemoration. It'll be there till the end of time, hopefully. So that's my small presentation. Back to you, Gerben.
Really good.
Thank you very much, Kevin.
Thanks, Kevin.
Do we have Norma?
Is Norma with us?
Nope.
I haven't seen Norma.
No.
We just obviously needs the story, this one.
Yeah.
It's only one.
It's not Peter Dixon, though.
No.
Definitely wasn't me.
Get over to you.
This is my father. He was in the Royal Naval Reserves, and in 1939, just like the TA would have its annual camp, and the reserves would have their annual cruise, and he was on HMS Sheffield when war broke out, and they were over at Denmark at the time. The Sheffield was a town class light cruiser. Next one, please, Gerben. That's the Sheffield that he was on. When he went on this fortnight's cruise, it was 6 years later when he got back. So it was the longest cruise in history. It took him around the world. He was in the Med. He was in New Zealand, South Africa, Kenya. South America, Canada. He was just about everywhere. Apart from the time that he was in the Med, I think he had a good war. Next one, please, Gervin. While I was doing some research, I came across a couple of photographs on the internet and I couldn't believe me luck. And here was my dad on both of them. Here he is as part of the crew on the HMS Tanner. He was a second from the right there. I picked him out immediately. It was unbelievable how I was able to find him. It's the next one, please, Gerben. And this was the crew with the Hursley. He's the back row is a little bit higgly-piggly, but it was near enough in the middle. Unfortunately, I don't think I can point them out exactly.
Mm-hmm.
But, he was on the Hursley, which later was renamed to the Critty because it was requisitioned by the Hellenic Navy, which is the Greek Navy, and Critty is Crete. And the ship see in action when the landings of Sicily, Anzio, and south of France. Next one, please, Gervin. This was on the back of the photograph. It was ammunition exploding on the upper deck as the Coventry, as we went past the Coventry to throw depth charges. Next one, Gervin. The Coventry was actually attacked by the JU-88s, which were the Stukas. And my dad never talked a great deal about the war. But he used to say when the Stukas came over, it was absolutely terrifying, the noise that they made and the noise that the bombs made. And the Coventry was so severely damaged that it actually had to be scuttled by the HMS Zulu. So we sank our own ship. But I'd just like you to read to you this little piece as the Coventry was attacked. On the 18th of May 1941, the first Victoria Cross of the Mediterranean campaign was awarded posthumously to Petty Officer Alfred Edward Sefton for great courage and endurance while on the HMS Coventry as she was being attacked on the 17th of May 1941 by German Stuka dive bombers while off Crete. The Coventry had gone to the assistance of a hospital ship, Abba, which had been attacked by German dive bombers. When the enemy engaged Coventry, raking her with machine gun fire, Petty Officer Sefton was mortally wounded, a bullet actually passing through his body and injuring an able-bodied seaman beside him. Although in great pain and partially blinded, he was stuck by his instruments and carried out his duties until the attack was over. He died of his injuries the next day. Petty Officer Sefton was buried at sea. His VC was on display at Coventry Cathedral. And this is the worst bit. This was horrendous. His VC was stolen from the cathedral in 1990. I hope the person that stole it rots in hell forever because he deserves it. How can somebody do something like that? It's unbelievable.
Hear.
Next one, please, Gerben.
It's strange, the Coventry and the Sheffield were both at the Falklands as well, weren't they?
Yeah, different ships, yeah.
Yeah, different ships, yes.
Like, you know. This was on the back of the next photo, the survivors from the Coventry being rescued by the escort vessels. Hursley and Groom. My dad was on the Hursley by then, and it's difficult to beat off any further attacks. They dropped depth charges because they thought there might have been a submarine attack as well as the air attack. Next one, please. And that was when they were circling the HMS Coventry, the upper deck's exploding, and they're picking up survivors. Next one, please, Gerben. These originals, by the way, they're only about 2x3 photographs. I don't know what they were taken of.
Medium format contact sheets.
Probably, yep. I think that's the Hursley.
2¼, 3¼.
Yeah. Next one, please, Gerben.
Swordfish.
Now, I'm not sure whether they're Germans, Italian, or whatever, but I think the dark spots might be Akak. Next one, please, Gerben. Oh, that's it.
That's it.
It
was really good, Peter.
Interesting.
Very
good.
Very interesting.
My dad never really talked a great deal about the war. The Stuka attack when he was in the Med, he had a South African pal, and the Stuka came to the ship and it dropped its bombs. It missed the ship narrowly. And the explosion, the plume of water from the explosion washed overboard his South African mate. And of course, because they were using evasive action, they never found him. So he drowned at sea, which is... But everybody had a tale to tell like that.
Mm-hmm. Very sorry.
Peter, just looking at those three aircraft going ahead, because they're in formation, I don't think that they'd be in action. There could well be fairy swordfish. Certainly the Italians used biplanes like that, but they're unlikely to be in action when they're flying like that.
Right. Yeah, there's nothing on the back of the photograph to say what they were, you know. That's just in his collection.
Very emotive picture.
But I noticed, David, that some of the medals that you had on display, my dad had a few of them as well.
Well, he would. The Defence Medal.
Defence Medal.
Yeah. 1939-45 medal.
Yeah, Africa Star. Atlantic something or other.
Yeah.
He had five, and not one, but one of them had a class bond. Yeah.
Have you still got them?
I don't have them. Before my dad died, he almost split them up between my son and my brother's son, and then he decided at the last minute that he wanted them to stay in the UK. So my son Andrew, he has them, and he has them mounted in a frame with the
like my dad's. But
yeah,
well, a bit of advice, Peter. Medals, as I've been advised by quite a few of my buddies in the forces, you should never split sets of medals up.
No. They were all campaign medals, like everybody got, you know.
Yeah.
Various things, you know. But yeah.
Peter, the one that was stolen, would it have his name on the back or not?
It probably did. There's quite a sad story attached to that, because the family. Well, I'm not the family, but a replica was made. And it came up for sale, and the family tried to buy it back. Now, its value was about £300, but somebody outbid them by about £1,200, and the family couldn't buy it back. So it's quite sad that they couldn't get it back. Mm-hmm.
Do you know how much they're valued at now, Peter?
Oh,
£300,000.
Well, the original.
Yeah.
You couldn't put a price on it.
£350,000-£400,000.
Yeah. I mean, I can't remember the guy who's got a fantastic VC collection.
Ashcroft.
That's him. Yep. Interestingly enough, you know, the ships that my dad served on, quite a few, were all built on the Tyne.
Yeah.
Tyne, isn't it?
One of them was the Esonia, which had two sister ships. One was built at Glasgow and the other was built in Belfast. And they started off life as liners. And then they were converted to merchant protection vessels. So, wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much, Peter.
Good.
Yeah, very good.
Peter. Hello. Next one, please. Hi. I struggled to find any VED photographs that I'd taken, so I used the... They said you could stretch the definition a little bit. So this has got military, and it's also topically taken in Wuhan, where the coronavirus started out. But this is me looking very silly, dressed as a Chinese general.
I thought it was you.
Yeah, a few yards. I'm only a few yards away from it, where a Chinese general was shot in 1919, which triggered the start of the Communist Revolution. So that was the reason I was dressed up. This was in the late 90s. So anyway, it's a bit military and very topical with Wuhan.
I'm surprised it fitted you, Peter, you know, because you're a tall bloke.
How did you get on top of that big concrete column?
Well, that was Dr. Sun, somebody famous in China. This one is a VE Day photo. This is a picture of me on VE Day.
Jolly good.
You're very cute, Peter.
Oh, you are very cute. What happened?
So I was born in the January, so this must be around about VE Day, give or take. But you see the posh chair, it was probably wasn't ours because we weren't posh. And I think my mother used to like to go to Jerome's photographers in the town or somewhere to get photos taken, so I suspect it was taken there. So anyway, that's a genuine VE period photograph.
Yeah, I was 6 weeks old when VE Day was on, Peter.
What?
I was 6 weeks old when VE Day
was on. Oh, I was about 4 or 5 months. I don't know.
Give that was a later celebration.
What?
I was a later celebration.
Oh, yeah. Right.
Exactly 9 months.
Not sure we need to know the details of that.
Yes, we do.
Next one, please. Yeah, this is it's not me again. Don't worry. This is a starter. Didn't know where to get more photos, so all the rest of the photos following this, I've actually snapped with my camera off the TV of a documentary of unseen photos from VE Day.
All right.
Just like this one, the little lad going off to the country with his tag on. A bit sad. He's looking very sad as well. Next one. Yeah, this is back to VE Day. So, little girl enjoying ice cream. Took a few goes to get the ice cream in the shot. She was eating it very quickly. But now I was just snapping them in one shot. So, next one. This seemed there was a famous picture taken, everybody's seen, but I haven't seen much, taken in the fountain on VE Day.
It was actually on the telly this morning, Peter.
Yeah, well, I shot these a couple of days ago, the programme that was on. So, seemingly that's been seen all over the world by some people.
He's got really knobbly knees, hasn't he, that soldier?
Would see mine.
I haven't got round to the soldiers yet.
Next one, please. That's real VE Day.
Really good.
This the film that was on is a bit shot, actually shot in Gateshead. So this is one of the Gateshead shots, one of the street parties on VE Day. I can't recognise where it is, but a bit of digging it could find out. But what stands out, as a comment you said, is it's all women and children. As I think there's one or two men scattered around, but all the men were away to the war. So the party was a bit one-sided, certainly in Gateshead. Next one, please. I'll stop there a minute. It's funny, you see the little lad, second from the bottom, go back. Second from the bottom is a lad with sort of curls on his forehead. I saw his picture and I thought, that's my nephew, John. And so I showed it to my wife and says, do you recognise anyone on this? And she says, that's our John. We both recognised the little lad. It's not him, like, obviously.
You said Billy.
Sorry, she just corrected us, it was Billy. Short-term memory's knackered again. But anyway, they both take them out on the photograph. It's weird. Next one. Well, this is two very happy soldiers along with two very proud young ladies. I think we should
used to have good bras in those days, didn't they?
I don't know what attracted me to this one, but we'll go on to the next one before everyone gets excited. This was took a bit of catching with his stills camera. The guy's obviously been celebrating quite a few beers, wobbling up the street. There's a brilliant shot, brilliant pictures guy on his way from the party. So this is after the party, I think. We're still waving the flag anyway.
Super.
Okay, next one. Zoom slow now. This one's just, well, can anyone recognise where this is? It's back to Gateshead again.
Salvan Paul.
Right. Well, I reckon it is. It didn't tell us on the film, but...
It definitely is, Peter. It's the bottom of my street.
Well, all right. Now, it's the top corner of the big main green, I reckon.
Yeah.
The houses behind. But anyway, that was celebrating VE Day on the piggyback race, which is a local tradition in Gateshead. Next one, please. What's next? Oh, yeah, I think it's the last one. Back to London, just trying to get a shot which showed, partly shows, anyway, this is a Trafalgar Square over Germany and such like.
Isn't it?
And that's only part of the crowd. Some of the shots, like, you could see the crowd was absolutely immense. Totally opposite. If you saw the pictures they had on the TV today, it was totally deserted and there was one guy walking his dog across or something. Totally opposite. But just shows how many people were out for the celebration. Okay, that's it. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Very good, Peter.
Okay, thanks.
I'm going to have to love and leave you guys.
Okay, Ed, thank you.
Okay, we'll see you next week, presumably.
Next week, before you go, next week is the results of the spring isolation competition that our judge is going to join us next week.
Oh, yes. Okay, then.
Right. See you then, Ed. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye, Ed.
Bye.
Bye. Right. Incidentally, we often hear that people never spoke about the war and things. And obviously some people had very bad experiences they didn't want to talk about. But I think a great deal of it was that they were never asked about it. No one ever asked me about the war for donkey's years until these anniversaries started coming. And it's in the press and it becomes a hot topic. And then I get asked quite a bit. But I would have gone 50 years without anyone ever asking me one question. So people would say that I never talked about the war. You know, that I just wasn't the sort of person who did. Anyhow, that's just a passing thought. This is... Sorry, Rebecca.
No, I'm just agreeing with you, yes. I think people didn't like to ask.
I'm not saying it's all one thing, and I'm suggesting it's a two-way thing, that they didn't necessarily volunteer, but also they weren't asked.
Yeah.
This is the bit of boat in the corner with HMS Zambezi. It's a destroyer on which I serve. This is one of the few action shots. It's not fired in anger. It's a depth charge. This is a couple of depth charges going off. We were exercising at the time. Otherwise, I would have been preoccupied and we wouldn't have been snapping. I have a big pile of... 2.25, 3.25 contact sheets, but most of them were taken on a Brownie camera by a friend of mine, as he now is, on the ship. But so this was really just seeing one. It's one of two I tried. The other one is a torpedo being fired, a fish. And although I've caught it, I haven't been as successful as Gerben was with the mortar, because the back end of it is still connected. It's sticking out, but it hasn't quite left the ship. And ideally, you want it between the ship and the sea. But I was working with a camber that maximum speed is 1/50th, but you can cope with that. But you'd have to be a pretty smart operator to get the next frame within 5 seconds. So usually, you've only got one frame, and then you can prepare for the next chance when it comes. So it wasn't like today's snapping. Anyhow, next one. I missed out on VE Day in England, or any of the UK. But on the other hand, what I did do was go into Bergen to relieve the city. And this is probably on VE Day. It might be the day after. There's some dispute about this. The ship in the foreground is the destroyer Zambezi, and the one ahead of us is the cruiser Norfolk. We had a Norwegian pilot come aboard, and someone who was on the bridge said that he was crying the whole time. He was so overcome with emotion that he couldn't stop crying. I have others going up the fjord with other little ships crowding round and things, but I've limited myself to one. The Germans were still armed, and as we went up the fjord, we passed gun batteries that were there to defend the city. And Germans were sitting at their guns, and we were a bit scared in case someone loosed a shell off at point blank range, but no one did. And there were about 37,000 armed Germans in Norway, and until the army moved in, no one attempted to disarm them. Anyhow, next slide. But
it's a super photo.
Now, this one, the link between these two photos, apart from 75 years, is the crest. The one on the left is me, and it was taken just after the war when I got a camera, and it's a self-timer on it. I was trying to record the life ring, but I haven't got it at a very good angle. And again, it would be 3 or 4 weeks before I would see the print to know whether I'd manage it. But when I was on the ship, I was radar operator. I was ship's painter. And for a bit of private enterprise, I was ship's barber. But the painter, you know, there's no way to know. Alan will probably know who was in the Navy. Sometimes the decisions are made. I went aboard this ship as part of the commissioning crew at Cammell Laird's yard. And people were allocated off to jobs. It's a bit like Tennyson said, at charge of the lifeboat, there's not the reason why. I was made ship's painter. I wasn't asked whether I'd ever handle a paintbrush. I was, for some reason, perceived as a suitable person to be ship's painter. I was in charge of the paint shop. I didn't have to do any intricate work initially, because when we painted ship, half the ship's crew would be painting, and I would be supplying them with paint from the paint shop. But I don't want to spend too long in details, but when the war ended, during the war, no ships carried names because we didn't want to give the enemy any information. All life rings were painted in quarters. I think, yeah, orange and perhaps yellow, anyhow, in two quarters. And as soon as the war ended, we were supplied with two life rings like the one you see, painted with the ship's crest and HMS Zambezi with shadowing. And of course, as ship's painter, I found that I then had to paint all the other life rings on the ship, probably a dozen or more, to match the two we were supplied. And that's one I'd just done. And so I learned a little bit about painting. Fortunately, I wasn't too bad at it.
Was your favourite colour grey?
it was painted in colour. No, they were painted in colour, the same as the mug.
Yeah.
And just recently, within the last couple of months, someone looking on eBay and things found that there was memorabilia for sale now, and that they were selling Zambezi mugs. And so this is a Zambezi mug bought within the last 2 months. Wow. With the crest on. Yeah. It's not quite right, but it's very near. So that was...
Mm-hmm. Yep. I was going to ask,
I saw a program probably a couple of years ago where it said that the ships were actually painted in zigzag colours.
No, our ship, if you see the picture of Zambezi published, it'll nearly always be painted in zigzag colours. And that's the way we got it at Camelads. We painted it all single colour, battleship grey, and it remained that way till we put mothballed it.
Because you never ever see photographs of the ships.
No.
These flashes and zigzags on. I've never ever seen one.
There's one in Liverpool Dock. Zigzags.
Yeah, they served in other theatres of war. In the North Atlantic, the best camouflage seemed to be plain light grey. And so that's the colour we all were in. Mm. In fact, I had all the 5 gallon drums of all the colours that we should have been for a zigzag. And when I couldn't get rid of them, it was an absolute pain. On dark nights, one would go over the side every now and then. I got a nice amount of room to spare in the paint shop. I had everything in the paint shop. It was ideal. Even after the war, when I bought a stalk of bananas in Lisbon, green to bring home, people had them in the mess decks and they gradually nibbled them, but mine I left in the paint shop and I was able to go home with it. Anyhow, let's get on with the next one or we'll be here all night. I've only got 6. Now, most people see servicemen of all sorts in uniform. Alan will probably know that, unless things have changed, that we spent nearly all our life in overalls. We put uniforms on when we went ashore, particular parades, different things like that. But we spent nearly all the working week in overalls. And that's myself and a mate, Lofty and Blondie. And yeah, well, everyone who's got a name which can be done, anything can be done with, or a feature, is Ginger, Spud Murphy. The Navy's great on nicknames. So it also means afterwards you don't always know the name of a lot of people in the photographs you've taken because you just know them as Ginger or something like that.
Yorkie White.
Yeah, and if you take it black and white, Ginger doesn't show up well. Anyhow, that's it. Another thing people wouldn't know, but most people are issued with 2 uniforms when they join. But when they want a new one, very few people went for a service issue. They usually went to a private tailor and had one made. And I assumed at first this was something the officers would all do. But I found that all the men I served with, and in port towns, there were tailors that specified in making seamen's uniforms. So anyhow, moving on and jumping forward now, this is a commemorative stone on the headland in Cove, on the headland of Loch Ewe in northwest Scotland. And it's where most of the British convoys sail from. Not the first one, but the second one, and most of them after. And once every so often, I mean, they have a service every year, but once every so often, they've had a major service. And they've invited a lot of people. And this is one of those. This was 2017, was the last big one. There was one this year, unfortunately. Of course, it's had to be cancelled in May this year. I was really looking forward to it. But they're members of the Scottish Arctic Convoy Club. And that close-up is just of the prescription that is written on the stone. And it's... you know, just in memory of the people who lost their lives on the convoys. It didn't matter whether they were merchant seamen or Royal Navy or who they were, but the UK people. Yeah, next one.
Right.
Yeah.
What was your nickname?
Lofty.
Lofty,
either Lofty or Lofty Elwood. I was 4 foot. 6 foot and 5/8. 6 foot. I was 6 foot, and yeah, 7/8 or 5/8. Just under 6'5", actually. 6'4" and 7/8. That's
well, all right.
These are just a few veterans of the old codgers that have been around. The one on the middle, the one in the middle, is a Russian, because at the last one, at 2017, we had a contingent of Russian veterans come and join us, and the other one's an English one. Russians are very big on medals. If you look on the one of me, the two medals at the bottom are both Russian medals. I've got the 39-45 star first, and then the Atlantic star, but then we've got the Arctic star, which we've only got two or three years ago. We got it in 2017, and on the right, the end of world medal. And there's another Russian one probably coming within the next few weeks. Some people have got quite a lot of Russian ones. And that's the hat I've got on now.
Yeah, very good.
Cheers, that's it.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, Roy. Really good.
Very interesting. Roy, they were saying, I saw a programme today or yesterday, they were saying that the Russians celebrate VE Day the day after us.
Yes, actually, I turned down an invitation to go to Russia to the celebration, because they invited us to send a contingency over, people over. And I just decided that probably it was going to be all that, a hell of a lot. When we were invited to Archangel a few years ago, there was a 16-hour wait or something between transport. And I thought, really, you know, I haven't got enough life left to spend it doing that sort of thing. So I turned it down.
Well, Roy, that was very interesting. Thank you.
It was.
Yes.
Did you manage to get mine or not?
To get?
My photograph.
No.
Okay. Well, anyway, it is 20 to 10, folks.
All right. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. They came in. We can do them next week, right?
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Yep. Next week, we are going to be joined by the judge of the Spring Isolation Competition. I will send you his email, Gerben, to invite him, if that's all right.
Yes. Okay.
And I have asked him to join us about 8:15, so we can have a few minutes chit-chat beforehand and whatever, and then he'll join us about 8:15. Is that all right, or do you want me to change the time?
No, sounds good.
Sounds all right. Okay, so he's going to introduce himself and then judge like we do normally, but just over Zoom instead. Okay, anybody want to say anything else? Are we all happy?
Yes, please.
Yes, Alan, please. Yes, Alan.
As has become normal, can I please ask for one or two of the images from the people who presented tonight? And with a few, although I've jotted down some words, if you want to put a few words against those images, very, very grateful.
Yes, it was fascinating.
And they'll go in next week's bits and pieces. Thank you.
I see tonight, bits and pieces have come out tonight, so thank you very much again, Alan. I'm sorry my piece turned out longer than I anticipated, but...
No, it's all relevant.
I hope people read it. Anyway, anybody, anything else to say?
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
Splice the main verse.
Good night.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks, Gerben.
Bye bye. Cheers.
Thanks, Gerben.
All right.
Splice the main verse.
Parting up there, I'll not forget you, sweetheart.
I'll end it here.